Have you ever heard of Mabel Pingwa Lee? How about Claudette Colvin? They may not be household names, but they were seminal figures in the women's suffrage and civil rights movements, respectively. And they had something else in common. They were teenage girls. It turns out that young women have played a key role in a number of social movements, and their story is told in the new book, Young and Restless, The Girls Who Sparked America's Revolutions, by Maddie Kahn. Maddie has been a staff editor at Glamour and Elle magazines, and a writer whose work has been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Atlantic, Harper's Bazaar, and other publications. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, my name is Maddie Kahn, and I'm the author of Young and Restless, The Girls Who Sparked America's Revolutions. Before I wrote this book, I worked as an editor at Elle and Glamour, and I've spent the past decade profiling people like Greta Thunberg, Dr. Catalin Carrico, who helped invent the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine, and Dr. Jill Biden. A constant source of fascination for me is the extent to which being underestimated, which can happen to anyone but is often a feature of being an ambitious woman, can drive a person forward. I'm interested in how that functions as fuel, and it's an idea I came back to often in writing this book about girls on the vanguard of social change in America. In the years I spent researching and writing this book, I learned a lot, and I'm going to share five of the most compelling insights with you. Insight number one, look to your left, look to your right. Those are the people you'll change the world with. When we think about social change, we think about leaders, Martin Luther King, Gandhi, even Greta Thunberg, the climate activist who got her start as a teenage girl, demanding attention for the global warming crisis. But students of social movements know that leaders don't single-handedly mobilize some pliable flock of people. Efforts to realize change tend to start on the ground, among people who are experiencing injustice and sharing in a vision of what a better future could look like. From the Lowell Mill girls who protested unfair working conditions in the 1830s to the civil rights activists who risked their lives to desegregate schools and buses in the 1950s and 60s, the people who make change together are often friends, drawing on real relationships in order to build a movement. Friendship, or peer mentorship, as we might call it, is a potent political force. Here's just one example I love from the book. In 1960, a 16-year-old girl named Brenda Travis got arrested for attempting to desegregate a bus station waiting room. She was sentenced to 4 months in jail for her so-called crime, and when she was released, her principal expelled her because she'd missed the first month of school. No grown-ups swept in to fight for her, but her friends did. Over 100 students walked out in protest. When the New York Times covered the event, it credited a field organizer with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, also known as SNCC, named Bob Zellner, with planning it. But Zellner knew he'd had no part. He'd been sitting in his office when the kids swept past him. He later quoted Gandhi, "There go my people. I have to go and run and catch up because I am their leader." Want to change the world? Don't look to a man at a podium or a woman with a microphone. Look around you. Those people on either side of you are your allies. They'll take action. Your quote-unquote leader will follow. Insight number two, no generation starts from scratch. As I embarked on the project that would become this book, I thought I might keep my focus on this current generation of teenage girls, Gen Z. They're at the forefront of the movement to address climate change and gun violence. They've organized marches for racial equality via Instagram DMs. Something seems special to me about these girls, and I thought I might explore what made them so uniquely well-suited to protest and activism. It didn't take long for me to realize that teenagers have in fact been incredible organizers for centuries, and that this generation was, of course, standing on the shoulders of those who came before them. There is a temptation, and one I tried hard not to get into, to paint young people as one-dimensionally rebellious. Whatever their parents did, they won't do. Whatever came before, they want to reject. Again and again, I found that to be untrue. Yes, adolescents make their mark by individuating, and sometimes that means pointing out what of the status quo needs to be disregarded. But the true history of social progress is full of intergenerational partnership. Young people bring energy and new ideas. Older people bring perspective and strategy. You don't necessarily need both, but you're better off with both. In the 1910s, suffragists recruited young idealistic women to hand out flyers and march with banners at their parades. The older women wanted the movement to have an appealing face. Girls provided it. In the 1960s, civil rights activists like Bernice Johnson, later Bernice Johnson Reagan, accepted hospitalities from older folks who wanted to support their work but couldn't take their place on the front lines. Johnson Reagan had once been dismissive of the role that grown men and women had in the movement, but she later wrote that she and her peers had not taken some quote-unquote unbelievable leap. It had been, as she put it, a continuance. No activist needs to start from scratch. Appreciate the work that older people have done and then put your own stamp on it. But don't assume that there's no infrastructure or precedent for what you want to accomplish. Do your research, take what you can from what exists, then innovate. Insight number 3, refine your message, then refine it again. I almost feel for the middle-aged Luddites who now have to do social media battle against Gen Z organizers who can run circles around them on the internet. In activism, as in politics, communication is everything. You can't win if you're losing the message war. Young people know that, and they're doing what generations of protesters have, using the medium du jour to their advantage. Entrenched interests tend to have money, inertia, and accumulated influence on their side, but upstarts can claim a platform if they know how to use it. During the Civil War, a gifted teenage orator named Anna Elizabeth Dickinson became a nationwide sensation for her fiery speeches. Adults could lecture too, but no one was breeding precociousness with wit and intellect quite like Dickinson. She became one of the most famous and best compensated orators of her era. Now the advantages of being a good communicator are even more obvious. The teenagers who were organizing for March for Our Lives to take on the gun violence epidemic, and whose efforts helped lead to the first bipartisan piece of legislation on the issue in 3 decades, run rhetorical circles around their political opponents. A college student named Olivia Giuliano weaponized Twitter a few months ago to raise over $700,000 for abortions after a congressman mocked her on the platform. Distill what you want to say, then keep distilling it. Your policy ideas don't have to fit into a tweet, but your comeback should. Insight number 4, use disadvantages to your advantage. One of the questions that this book hopes to answer is, what makes teenage girls such good and capable activists? How is it that in movement after movement, it's girls who stand on the front lines, risking it for progress? One of the explanations at which I arrived in conversation with researchers and scholars is that the qualities that girls are socialized to develop make them skilled organizers. We raise girls to collaborate, to be articulate, to sacrifice for the greater good, to devote themselves to others, and to charm. Think of what movement work requires. The Venn diagram, as the kids say, is a circle. In talking to successful and passionate activists from the civil rights movement to second wave feminists to climate organizers, it has become clear to me that girls have always been savvy enough to use what is held against them to their advantage. Second wave feminists made consciousness-raising circles a centerpiece of their movement infrastructure, cannily creating space for the very thing that those who derided them accused them of wasting their time on, talking. Youth organizers dismissed as being too online and dependent on their phones have built entire coalitions on the internet and across social media platforms. Generations of girls have marshaled what is used to discredit them in service of their ideals, and the results speak for themselves. Insight number 5, know your purpose. This one is simple and important. Know what you're fighting for. Movement building is hard work. All progress is hard work. Losing sight of the reason you're slogging through it is a recipe for infighting, distraction, and bad decision-making. The opposite is also true. Knowing why you're out there can drive you to persevere even in the face of unimaginable barriers. 9 months before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on that Montgomery bus, a teenager named Claudette Colvin was arrested for the same crime. She never became the face of the movement, as Parks did. She ended up pregnant in high school and felt dismissed, not deemed the quote-unquote appropriate figurehead for the bus boycott, let alone the movement as a whole. Months later, activists were looking for plaintiffs in a case that would challenge the kind of discrimination she'd encountered on buses in court. They tried to recruit quote-unquote upstanding men, ministers, and businessmen, but those people were afraid, and they had a lot to lose. In the end, 4 women stepped forward, and 2 of them were teenage girls. Claudette Colvin was one. She had never been in it for the fame or recognition. She knew what she was fighting for, and it brought her to testify under circumstances that made grown men quake. These days, more people know who Colvin is, but few recognize what I think of as her most lasting contribution to the movement, her decision to be a plaintiff in Browder v. Gale. Colvin's life was hard, and the scrutiny to which she subjected herself didn't make it easier, but she never forgot what she was fighting for. When it came time to step up, that awareness made all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you go out and get a copy of Young and Restless. The story of these girls is the story of America.
Thank you, Maddie. That was Maddie Kahn with 5 big ideas from Young and Restless, The Girls Who Sparked America's Revolutions. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.